to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, DJ Fighter, and I'll be talking about DU's Medieval Combat Club. Welcome back to the show, guys. I hope you all have been having a wonderful week. If not, just take a moment for yourself and breathe in. I hope you enjoy the show. So last week I talked about blue weapons and the rules for making this type of weapon. I also talked about the different fighting styles and fighting scenarios that make more use of blue weapons. Today I'll be talking about the history of Belagarth and the history of Ape Armored Penguins as a club. And I also have a guest for tonight's show. Say hi, Tink.
Hi.
Sweet. Welcome to the show. So Armored Penguins holds practice every week on Fridays and Sundays on the library lawn. Fridays we meet from 2 to 5 p.m. and on Sundays we meet from 12 to 5 p.m. I want to take this moment before we get started with the rest of the segment to talk about a few upcoming events. On March 5th, we have German Invasion. The event is taking place at Google, located in Mountain View, and starts at 11 and goes till 6 p.m. It's a pretty cool event because it is on Google campus, and Google is pretty cool. And there will be a variety of things for people to do, not just fighting. Apparently, there will be games, and you can just, hang out. So it'll be a cool day event. March 12th is March of the Penguins. Come check out your very own Armored Penguins host one of our biggest events of the year. The event starts at 9 a.m. on Forest Meadow Field, and we'll be out there till 5, fighting pretty much all day. Practice was pretty easy going this week. With midterms coming up, a lot of our fighters have been staying in to study, which is understandable. School comes first. Sunday was a much better turnout, though. With us starting earlier, we have a lot more. We have more time for fighters to come pop in for an hour or two for a study break before they go back to studying. A lot of the community members also came out on Sunday, which is always fun, especially when there are people we don't normally see on a regular basis. So, for example, we had Princess, who came out. Apparently, he hasn't been coming around often, but he's one of the people who is hosting the event on this Saturday at Google. Ace and Zale came out on Sunday as well, which is fun because they had a couple new things to teach newer fighters, as well as getting newer fighters fighting with other weapons other than their normal weapon set, which is important to learn so that when you're fighting your normal weapon set, you know how to fight against that other weapon, which is really helpful. There are a bunch of different drills and exercises a fighter can do depending on what kind of skill they want to learn or work on. Sometimes a more experienced fighter will impart this knowledge to help new fighters become better fighters. The drill I was working on with Ace was designed for me as a flow fighter to work on aggression against min reds. Min reds are just the minimum length required for a red classified weapon. Again, reds are two-handed weapons and they can get pretty scary depending on who's holding it as well. But as a weapon alone, they're big, they're dangerous, and sometimes very, very scary. It was helpful learning how to fight against a min red more aggressively because when it comes to certain weapon sets, I tend to take a more offensive or defensive position based on whether or not I think I can beat the other person. So on a field fight, if a person who is wielding a red weapon is coming at me, I will tend to be more defensive because it's really hard to go offensive against a red weapon. As they're longer, they have more range, and I don't have enough as big of a range already since I have short arms. That's a bit of a disadvantage, but one of my advantages would be being fast, so I could rush in and try and kill the person before they get me. So that's what the drill I was working on helped me focus on in terms of fighting. The drill also helped me work a lot on getting sufficient force in to certain places at a close range. It's hard to do, especially when you're a new fighter and you get tangled up in your weapons. It's happening a lot with me, especially because my sword has cross guards. I don't really know how to get around that, but I'm learning, which is good for me. The mechanics of the drill worked something like I have 15 shots and 10 seconds to get a kill. If the person I'm fighting against counts to 10 seconds before I can get 15 shots, then that fighter gets to swing at me. In theory, I'm supposed to be able to get in close and get shots in order to kill the person before the 10 seconds are up. But I also have to try to keep the other person from moving around so much on the field. That's one of the more difficult parts of the drill, especially because the instinct for anyone would be to move back when someone moves in. You want to try to get out far enough of the range from the fighter, but still be able to get in close. It's really hard to get a fighter trapped into one space, especially if the other fighter has good footwork and is more experienced and is just really quick. So that's how Sunday practice went. We've also been sparring throughout the week. You may have seen people carrying a single blue with them around on campus. Armored Penguins as a club has started this fun little thing where we all try to carry a blue weapon around with us on campus so that in between classes, if we have time, we can spar if we see each other. It's kind of like a Pokemon battle. If you see each other, you lock eyes, and if you guys don't have anywhere to be, then battle commences, and yeah, it's just a fun, quick little thing to do between classes to also help fight single blues, because learning how to fight single blues is a good skill to have, especially when there will be plenty of times where you're not going to have an arm. Other than that, we've also been sparring in the back of the Edge Hill Village parking lot. We were sparring on Monday, and Pip actually taught me a few things as well, which was great because it's been a while since I've learned a lot. This weekend was a really big learning thing, so I'm glad to get back into the swing of learning new things on a consistent basis. There's always some kind of discrepancy or like people not being very clear when they're telling you something that could possibly improve your fighting. For example, sometimes advice can be really vague, such as saying your footwork needs improvement. It's vague because footwork can involve a lot of different things depending on what you're trying to accomplish. So you can work on footwork to accomplish just getting close and getting in, or you can work on footwork on just trying to get out of a sticky situation. Pip taught me to work in angles in terms of footwork is involved, which means working around a person's guard in order to get a shot in, or a kill shot more likely, which is more important. Angles are especially useful when a fighter isn't paying attention, and one can use angles to take advantage of that without really having to move so much. It's helpful in field battles because there'll be a lot of times where there'll be two-on-one fights, and one fighter will be really focused on getting the person next to you, and sometimes they won't even be paying attention to you, and that's a perfect time to utilize angles to kill the person who's trying to kill your teammate. Sometimes it just takes one movement to come in and get a kill shot, then moving back just as quickly as they came in. One of our community fighters, Shadow, does this really cool feint move that involves really good use of angles and footwork. One moment he's there in front of you, and before you can even blink, he's already killed you. It's pretty insane. It's fun to watch when you're not on the receiving end of that kill shot. I was also able to work on wraps. Wraps are shots that come in around a person's guard. It's sort of like you're coming in for a hug, really. It's different from strikes because strikes are very straightforward. If a person is really bad at, like, keeping their intentions or where they want to hit a secret, then you pretty much know where they're going to hit. It's the same with robs, but it's also kind of harder to know where they're going to hit, because when you go in for a rap, you can hit the butt, the back, or the shoulder with one move. It just depends on how you move your elbow or your wrist, really. As a smaller fighter who tends to utilize leg shots more often than any other strike, learning how to get a rap to the butt is better than going for legs, because hitting the butt is instant death. Hitting the legs, you're just going to leg them and they can keep walking, and there are people who are good at fighting on their knees. Going in for the butt wrap is also one of the easier wraps I can go for, since I am already short, especially against tall people where they tend to forget their legs and rely on footwork to get their legs out of striking zone. So going in for a high wrap for me, which would hit the shoulder or the back, generally not probably the best idea for me as a short fighter, because I would probably hit someone's head or their face or their throat, and that's never a fun thing. Taller people can definitely go for those high wraps, because most of the time they can get around at a higher point where hitting the head is less of an issue. Sometimes it just depends on the fighter. There are fighters who are really erratic and don't have great pinpoint control, but yeah. Higher wraps in general are just harder because there's always a chance of hitting someone in the head pretty badly or hitting them in the face, which is even worse because that's your face. That's going to hurt a lot more than probably hitting the back of the head. Sometimes, yeah, again, I said this before, but yeah, it just depends on the fighter and their mechanics. Going for a wrap that's coming in at the middle point, which is between the legs and the head, it's easier to defend, because if you're going for a middle wrap and the person is holding a shield, they can just move their shield down and hit your sword away. But if you can get around far enough, it's definitely possible to get that wrap in. Wraps are sometimes hard to do properly because depending on how you do the wrap, it can require a lot of wrist strength, which takes a lot of work to build up to, and it takes a lot of time. It's not something that a lot of people have right away. And wraps are harder for some people than they are for others. Like many things with sport, it takes practice. So that's how the week's been going so far. In the upcoming segment, I'll give a brief history of Armored Penguins, and Tink will be talking about a few of her own, a bit about her own fighting experience. This is DJ Fighter. You're listening to Armored Penguins, and we'll be back shortly here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, we are back from break. I'm DJ Fighter, and this is Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Armored Penguins as a club started back in 2011-2012, so this is when Cord was a freshman here at DU. Cord and Pip were part of the beginnings of the club, so to them, Armored Penguins is a bit like their baby. They can get kind of protective about what goes on, like how the club is dealt, and right now that's it's stressful sometimes. They're really attached to the club, and it means a lot to them since they both run the club back when there was, what, 5 members, and Pip was the only girl in the club, pretty much. And Cord will be graduating in May, so it's been interesting to see how everything evolves with the club, how leadership is passed down to people who will be here next year. And it takes a lot of, there's a transitioning period that takes a lot of time and work and patience, which is good because a lot of us do have that ability to be patient, which makes a good leader. Of course, Cord won't be leaving the club, which we're all really happy about because Armored Penguins would not be the same without one of our lovable goblins. Speaking of goblins, I have Tink here to tell you guys a little bit about her experience with AP and Bellegarde. Hey, Tink. So?
Hi.
How's everything?
Pretty good. I'm officially on spring break, so it's a great feeling.
Definitely. So, when did you get started as a fighter?
I got started the first semester of my sophomore year. And I wanted to join Armored Penguins my entire freshman year, but because I have a job back home that requires me to be back during the weekends, I never got the chance to come out. But when I would see them fighting, it looked like a lot of fun. I was just terrified to get hit with a stick because it looks like it hurts. It really does. But as soon as people, you know, take their first hit, you really realize that it's a pretty safe sport.
Yeah, definitely. I understand the whole terrifying thing, especially when you can hear the sounds of foam swords against bodies all the way from the back of Edge Hill Village.
A lot of people know when we're fighting because of the echoes of our shots hitting shields or people. And every once in a while, I'll get a text message saying good luck at practice from some of my friends. And you know you're making a huge impact when you're known as the nerds who beat each other up.
Yes, definitely. It's been interesting. It's been fun to have people come up to you and be like, oh, so you're in this club. That's really cool. Maybe I'll come out sometime and check it out. And it's like, sometimes they never do, but it's nice to have them say that it's a cool thing you do, because sometimes you get so caught up in, oh, this is such a nerdy thing. No one would do this, but a lot of people are actually interested. They just, time is a thing that not a lot of people have, so it prevents them from coming out and checking out the sport. What was it like starting out as a noob?
Honestly, it was honestly terrifying. I am thankfully blessed with a background in martial arts where I've been trained to fight with different weapons. But fighting with a real sword versus a foam-covered PVC pipe is a whole nother animal. It really is. And trying to modify my body mechanics was really difficult at first. And what I was trained for was to aim for everything above the belly button. So to be told that I can't strike above the shoulder really threw me off for a bit. It was really difficult to adjust. But working with Pip and Cord and our other amazing Realm members, it was sort of a smooth adjustment once you got some hands-on work like we do in our nightly spars.
Sweet, perfect. What do you like about fighting, about Bellegarde?
My favorite thing about Bellegarde in itself is that there is something to do for everybody. Even if you're not athletically inclined in the slightest, there's stuff you can go do. There's things you can go see, activities you can participate in, and it's really great. But if you are the type of person who just really needs that workout, needs that cardio, then you can go and fight. And what's amazing is the community and culture that has formed around fighters and non-fighters. And like AP, Bellegarth becomes a giant family.
So you mentioned that you have a background in martial arts. How has that helped and how has that hindered you in terms of fighting?
It has helped mostly because I know the proper way to swing a sword as to not hurt my shoulders, because I can tell you from experience, if you swing wrong and you make a bad connection, it'll really hurt your shoulder and can do some pretty severe damage. So being able to know how to properly maneuver was really great, but definitely the hindrance was switching from a heavier weapon to such a really light thing that is just fluid through the air, honestly.
So it's like just a weight adjustment that you had to get used to pretty much.
I mean, when you go from handling a solid steel sword to a PVC and foam piece that only weighs a few ounces, it's such a difference. But definitely enjoy swinging foam swords a lot better than a heavy steel one.
So, Tink, as a fighter, what are your goals? Like, what do you hope to accomplish in the sport? That kind of stuff.
For me right now, all I want to do is be on the field. And I really do love fighting alongside all my friends. But because I took one too many hits during my martial arts, I'm not technically allowed to, even though my doctor has said, you know, if you want to, go ahead. But it's more of, I want to be able to become comfortable enough with my fighting style that I can walk up to anyone I know and be like, hey, fight me, let's do this, and still be able to be safe. And that's the first stop. Second stop is hopefully, you know, going from feral to full blood in this lovely group I'm starting to become a part of.
Okay, so you mentioned feral. What is that?
So feral is a term that is used for people who are interested in entering a certain group. So it can also be known as an apprentice for people who are studying to be a war master, or a squire for those who want to be a knight. But to be a part of a unit, which is kind of like a group of soldiers in a way, becomes a small family, you kind of pledge that you want to be a part of that group. And you go through this little process of doing various tasks, whether that's coming up with personal lore or symbols. And by doing that, you show them that you really want to be a part of the family, and after a certain amount of time, you really do.
So it's like an initiation process, essentially.
Yeah, but there's no flogging or any very weird activities some fraternities do. None of that.
Definitely. How did you get started in the club, actually? I know some people walk by and get pulled in by Pip, who is very outgoing and just says, hey, you want to come join this thing? How did it start for you?
Well, I actually was sweet mates with Pitt my freshman year. And being a sweet mate with somebody who is constantly out there fighting, she constantly was asking me, hey, do you want to come out? Hey, you want to come out? And I really did. But again, because of work, I couldn't. And my sophomore year rolled around, and I was having some relationship troubles with my ex. And Pitt was like, you know what? You need to get your frustration out. Why don't you come down to the field and hit somebody with a stick? And that was really the first time that I got the real taste for bell fighting.
Sweet. What are a few things that has helped you become a better fighter?
Honestly, persistent sparring against Cord and our other fighters. And another thing for me is that when I watch two people spar and fight, I begin to watch their movements. And based on that, I figure out whether or not I can fight them and what works, what doesn't work, what, you know, will get through their guard and what may not work.
So your advice is pretty much spar as often as you can against as many different people as you can to see what works and some basically like that.
Yeah, because when you go to an event and you are on a huge field with 400 to 600 people, you never know who you're going to come up against. So if you are only comfortable fighting against a certain weapon style and you're faced with something else, you'll freeze and you won't know what to do. But if you get to spar against as many people as you can, as many weapon sets, you can take on anyone.
When you started out fighting, what was your first weapon set?
I started single blue like everyone else. But my shoulder was still recovering from surgery, so it wasn't quite strong enough to swing the sword as hard as I might have liked. So what actually did less damage was being an archer. So I used a bow and some arrows, and those are just padded arrows, and I shot people. And it was really great, and I love doing archery. It's a very fun thing. It takes some good skill, but that was my primary until Cord and Mowgli pushed me to go sword and board.
There's this joke in Belle. It's basically just like, if you're an archer, you're bad. What do you think about that? How do you approach people who are just like, oh, get good archers?
So a lot of the time, sadly, the stigma is that, oh, well, if you can't fight, be an archer. It's kind of like those who can't do teach. It's not a bad thing to be an archer. Honestly, it takes some serious skill to shoot somebody from over 50 feet away and hit them square in the face. That's actually pretty difficult. It's not just, you know, shooting a, you know, random arrow into a crowd of people and praying it hits something. Archers get good to where they can actually be running full speed and still nail someone in the face from at least 30 feet away. It's a real talent to be an archer, and a lot of people get upset with archers because they get taken out by the archers because their guard is just isn't up to snuff.
Yep, definitely. Arrows can be pretty annoying, but I do see the skill that it takes. It's hard to hit a moving target. Like, just throwing rocks is hard, and you have such a small space to hit, and you kind of just want to make sure that the arrow is coming in so that it doesn't hit someone in the eye like it did during one of our practices. It was pretty scary. Like,
yeah, sadly, some of the arrows that we have, if any of our foam weapons are left in the rain or any type of wet grass, then the foam starts to compact. And once it compacts, it becomes a super hard object. So when you get hit with it, it hurts, and that's why whenever there's a big storm or there's a new event, we always put all of our weapons through check. Arrows, javelins, blues, reds, everything goes through check to make sure nobody gets hit in the eye and loses part of their vision.
In fighting, is there like any other kind of weapon set that you want to pick up and hopefully want to try just for fun?
Someday I will master the goblin weapon of flail.
Ha, flails. I do not like flails. They're scary.
Oh no, they're very, very terrifying. I will completely agree with you on that. But when you have bigger people who are taller and have a large amount of muscle, like Titan, who's really good with a flail, pretty solid, if you analyze their movements enough, you can figure out where their open pockets are. I was able to, the one time Titan came out with the flail and Sai was having trouble beating him sword and board, and she kept trying to go for his legs. And when I pointed out the pocket that he leaves open on his shoulder, she nailed him and she got him. And it's all about watching and figuring it out.
How do you learn how to become a better fighter? I know some people, it takes a lot of practice. Some people can just watch a video and get the hang of it. What do you do aside from getting as much spars in as possible?
another thing that's really helpful when, if you can't watch a video and you're the type of person where you really need some hands-on work, sparring is great when you can do it spontaneously, but doing drills like Ace was doing with you is actually really helpful. Having someone to stand there as sort of a hit dummy and you practice different shots, or they throw shots at you and you practice blocking, that is honestly such a great way to just get your muscle memory in there, because otherwise, when you're in a high-stress situation, your mind will go completely blank. But having that muscle memory and repetition, it just becomes reflex after a while. That's why it's so hard to kill Cord. He's been doing this so long, his muscle memory is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is definitely hard to get Cord, especially because he has a kind of funky little fighting stance that's really deceiving. You oftentimes think he's coming in one way, and he completely tricks you and gets you the other way, and it's such a difficult thing to learn, but practice watching people as often as possible, sparring against them. Those are all really helpful tips that I found have helped me as well. We are just about time for another break, so we'll be back shortly. I'm DJ Fighter with my guest Tink.
Hey.
You're listening to Armored Penguins here on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Wasting all my time, 'cause when you're standing oh so near, I kind of lose my mind. It's not the perfume that you wear, it's not the ribbons in your hair.
Just what I need.
I need someone to feed. I guess you're just.
And we're back, everybody. It's your host, DJ Fighter. This is Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So in my first show, I briefly discussed a bit of history on Bellegarth so far. So for this segment, I'll be going more in depth with Bellegarth history and really just medieval combat sports in general, because they're all so closely related, really. There are several different types of medieval combat societies present in the country. Bellegarth is just one of them. Amtgard and Daggerhir are two more. Amtgard and Daggerhir and Bellegarth are considered to be the top three most prominent medieval combat societies, and the three are so closely related, more so with Daggerhir and Bellegarth than Amtgard is to Daggerhir and Bellegarth. Because the three societies are so closely related, cross-gaming, which is fighting or playing across all three societies, is a fairly common thing fighters do. So sometimes you'll come to a Bellegarth practice and there will be Dag fighters there. And recently we had, a couple fighters went to a con where they were fighting by Amtgard rules. So because the societies are so closely related, it's easy to be able to switch from different combat societies depending on what you want to do at that point in time. The main difference between the three societies is pretty much focus and kind of general how each society looks at themselves in terms of role-playing. Amtgard is considered to be more of a live-action roleplay than Bellegarth or Daggerhir. In Amtgard, there is also no sufficient force rule, meaning that a light tap would count for a hit just as much as going in and hitting hard enough per Bellegarth or Dag rules. Amtgard, unlike Bellegarth and Daggerhir, also uses class systems and magic. So for anyone who's played a role-playing game like Diablo or Dragon Age, Amtgard sort of simulates that kind of game atmosphere. All three societies are focused on medieval combat reenactment. Bellegarth has its origins back to the 1970s, as it was originally part of Daggerhir. Daggerhir is inspired by the movie Robin Hood and the book Lord of the Rings. The founder of Daggerhir, Artar, started creating ads for the radio, and that advertised Daggerhir in medieval combat sports. And these ads ran on the radio in Washington, D.C., which then caused Daggerhir to become a really popular hobby in that area. And then it spread across the country because a person who was part of Dag went to college and took that with him and started their own realm. Bellegarth was formed due to a dispute and rule changes that were being made in Daggerhir. What happened essentially is rules were formalized. The creator of Daggerhir really envisioned for the society, shouldn't say sport, but it's pretty much the same, but he imagined the society to be more medieval and high fantasy themed and less of a sport. So really he wanted it to be more theatrical than being treated like a sport. So this was when costume, otherwise known as garb, was formalized into the rules in order to keep this theme. Because it was formalized, there were people who didn't like the change. They didn't like being refrained. So they decided to branch off and create Bellegarth. Bellegarth and Daggerhir are fundamentally the same. The rules are very, if you look at the rules for both sports, there's not much difference. Really, the difference lies in the focus. Bellegarth is seen more as a sport, whereas Daggerhir is really focused on the history of medieval times and being realistic, even though there are themes of high fantasy involved in Daggerhir. Another thing about Bellegarth is there's this thing called magic switch. In Daggerhir, when you lose an arm, you have to drop your weapon, bend down, pick it up with your good arm. There is absolutely no use of magic in Daggerhir. This is to stick to the theme of being realistic. Because Bellegarth is really more focused on being a sport than being historically accurate, when you lose an arm, you're allowed to just switch your weapon in midair without having to first drop your weapon on the ground and bending down to pick it up with your good arm. As mentioned previously, Daggerhear and Bellegarth combine elements of high fantasy and with medieval history. Because it combines these things, it's not uncommon to see normal or what is called mundane elements along with mythical elements. So it's pretty common in Bellegarth and Dag to see people painted different colors to represent their monster race, fighting with or against human or human-like races. Humans and human-like races would be, these would be your elves, your dwarves, etc. They're all considered pinkies. There's a bit of a history on that, I think. Tink, do you want to explain that?
Well, originally, the big thing was you had some of the people who we call pinkies or kniggets, which is, you know, just making fun of the word knight, and they take the game a bit more on the serious edge, which isn't a bad thing at all, but they're very much for the structure, the service, the rule following, and are very what we like to call uptight. And monsters were created and born as a way to just bring more fun back into the game. I paint myself green, wear crazy clothing, and talk in a funny accent because why not? I can hit someone just as hard as the next guy, but what's the fun in that if I don't get to act goofy and be someone other than my boring college self?
So, monster races were basically just to have, you can have your serious sides without being way too serious and just kind of ruining the fun of the sport.
Because why not bring rainbows into it, man?
Yeah, I mean, I will admit it's pretty fun pretending to be something other than a human, which is why I decided I would be Fae, but less so on the pinky side. For a bit of background on that, there are certain mythical races that are considered pinky just because they look human, or they're not really traditionally in myth, they're not really the type of race or kind of people to really use violence or defend themselves, really. So, like, fairies, fae and fairies has a different connotation, because when you think of fairies, you kind of think of Tinkerbell, and people think that's stupid in Bellegarth. I like it personally, but I wouldn't, if I'm going into Bellegarth with the intentions of becoming a serious fighter, I don't want people thinking of me to be Tinkerbell, even though Tinkerbell is feisty and
she's scary.
Yeah, if you've watched Peter Pan or read Peter Pan, Tinkerbell is really not a nice fairy. Not a nice fairy. She's, yeah.
Spunky.
Yeah. But because fairies, there's a certain connotation behind calling yourself a fairy, it'd be advised to go with fae, because fae in myth has, there's no clear good or bad. I mean, there are things like Seelie, Unseelie, and Seelies, which are the lighter side fairies, and Unseelie are the darker side fairies, but really, it's a moral gray area with that, if you will. So that's that. What else, historically, Bellegarth?
I mean, when everything started out, especially for monsters, there weren't many monsters. There still aren't very monsters in regards to certain races. You have kobolds, and there's very few of them, but they have a story to back it up. They have history to back up why there's so few of them. You have people like sea trolls. That's a new thing, but somebody was able to come up with an idea, create such a ornate, beautiful backstory behind it. And so it became a monster race. Honestly, all it takes when you are wanting to find the race you belong to, whether it be a pinky or be a monster, it's really important to make sure that it is something that you are comfortable portraying. Because it's one thing to be like, oh, that person's outfit's kind of cool. But if you don't feel comfortable painting yourself green or orange or purple or blue or any other color you can think of, then maybe that's not right for you. Or you could be Pip. She's a kobold. She doesn't like to paint orange, but her hair is orange. So she created a backstory. And so she is one killer monster with a wonderful history. And now that there's a lot of us, we have created a inner working between all of us to combat the pinkies and their ways.
So, like, Bellegarth definitely has, like, a nice, creative history of people just taking the initiative to come out and create their own thing and just have fun with it and just roll with it, pretty much.
Yeah, it really started. The main monsters came out of Tennessee. Tennessee. And honestly, the reason why so many of us are drawn towards the monsterdom isn't necessarily because we're crazy people, you know, driven to murder everybody and eat their babies. Like, that's weird. That's not how that works. But we love to have fun. You can do all kinds of shenanigans as a monster, like start a conga line in the middle of a field battle. That's normal monster things. So why not have a little bit of fun while you're hitting your friends with sticks?
Yeah, definitely agree with that. It's just about time for another break. You are listening to Armored Penguins. I'm DJ Fighter with my guest here, Tink. And you're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu.
Thank you. lost in a bathroom stall. A southern girl with a skylit draw. A wave goodbye to Ma and Pa, cause with the birds of shade. With the birds of shade, it's a lonely view. With the birds of shade, it's a lonely view. Soft spoken with a broken jaw. Step outside, but not to brawl. And autumn sweet wind, call it fall. I'll make it to the moon if I have to crawl. And with the birds of shade, it's a lonely view.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Armored Penguins on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So Tink here is going to be talking about goblins.
Goblins are a wonderful race, of course I'm biased, but goblins are little green critters that love to cause mischief, and there's different types of goblins. So, for example, I am a mech goblin, which means that I'm that crazy person who decides to take random things and build something. And to kind of denote that I'm a mech goblin, I put gears and other steampunk sorts of decorations on my stuff. And my personal symbol is actually a gear with the North Star slapped right in the center of it. And as a goblin, you really have the ability to kind of go crazy with your stories because goblins don't make sense. So it's okay. So I have this wonderful opportunity to make a story for myself and my character, because why not? So I am the crazy mech goblin who lives in a laboratory. I don't get out much. And because I don't get out much, I am extremely awkward, and I have paler green skin than the others. And something that's wonderful about other goblins, such as hobgoblins or night goblins, is that each subspecies of a race has some wonderful stories written behind them, written by some really talented people. And it's there were five originally. When the whole goblin race began, you had Izarath, who is the king of the goblins. You have Kudzu, the Kadin, and you have Skrad, our witch doctor, although there are many others there. Well, not really, but Kort's starting to work on that one. And we also had Blix, and he is another type of goblin that is, and just the whole main group of people are actually a wonderful group to talk to. They have such wealth of knowledge about the whole race, which is really great. And when Kazi came around a few years later, he added an amazing amount of lore to the species. And within the goblins themselves, there's little tribes of them. So Kord, it has the tribe of the Burning Moon, which I'm also part of, but there's also the tribe of the Snotlings, and they're the smaller, more vicious goblins. And that would be for people like me and other fighters. And it's such a wonderful thing to find your species. And for you, it's fae, and for people like Rotten, it's ogre, and Pip, it's kobold. It's such a wonderful thing. And As that goblin, you get to really experience all kinds of new things. And goblins don't have to huddle in one unit. You can go wherever you please if you want to. But personally, for me, I gravitated towards Horde. And Horde is a fundamentally monster unit. And they're the ones who pull off the crazy shenanigans, like moving someone's tent in the middle of the night, because why not? Or starting the Congo line and crazy stuff. And it's really great. It's really wonderful.
Does sound pretty fun, especially with all that lore and that history kind of behind goblins as a race. Because we are reaching the end of our show, is there any interesting little facts about goblins that you'd like to tell everyone?
Goblins are notorious for being devious, little, evil, constantly hungry for food critters, and safe to say that if something shiny goes missing, one of us monsters is responsible.
So, I know goblins have erogenous zones in weird places. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, why not? So, goblins' erogenous zones are our elbows and our knees. Our elbows are far more sacred, of course. So, you will constantly, as goblins, as a part of the lore, we will wear either long sleeves or elbow covers and knee covers if we decide not to wear pants. And that's because we are holding our zone sacred for that special one.
That sounds wonderful. We are at the end of our show, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope everyone has a good night and drives safely. I also hope you guys have a good weekend and a good spring break, because it is that time, actually. This is DJ Fighter with my guest, Tink.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.